Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. Several years ago, I ran across a book. I don't even remember the title of it. But it was an author who collected strange names, coincidental and unique names. And he made a whole book out of this. And so what he tried to do is collect names of people that had something to do with what happened in their life. So it won't take you but a minute to catch on to what's happening here. But there were two men who were executed in the electric chair, and their name was Wilburn and Frizzle. There was a Montreal window washer who died by accident, falling as he was washing windows. His name was Will Drop. Joe Bunt became a baseball coach. Dan Druff became a barber. Goforth and Ketchum became police officers and partners. O'Neill and Prey became partners in church equipment. P.P. Peters was a urologist. I knew I'd eventually get some of you. A plaster contractor's name was Will Crumble. You won't believe this. This one actually happened to me. I used to work at Baptist Hospital in Memphis when I was a teenager, 19. And there was a doctor there. I'm not exaggerating. I've heard it over the intercom. And I can still bring it back in my memory. The intercom would call for Dr. Hurt, Dr. G.I. Hurt. I thought it was a joke till I saw his name advertised on a park bench in Memphis. And I went, he's a real guy. Doc, I'm not sure I want to go to Dr. G.I. Hurt. Inside a person's name contains a lot of meaning. There's two or three things that you'll find contained inside a name. One thing you find in a name is reputation. We tend to summarize a person into one or two thoughts when we hear their name. You know, in a conversation, it's not unlikely for somebody to say, oh, that's just like so-and-so. And they throw the name out and everybody goes, yeah. And we summarize a person's entire life in one or two thoughts based on their name or the reputation of their name. Let me just name a few names this morning and see if one or two thoughts don't come to mind. Adolf Hitler. Summarize, I mean, already one or two thoughts jump to your mind. Osama bin Laden. Monica Lewinsky. Mother Teresa. Billy Graham. Elvis Presley. Charles Manson. Dr. Jack Kevorkian. People's entire decades of living, decades of decision making, decades of training, decades of education, decades of marriage and family and parenting, decades of work, all summarized in one or two thoughts based solely not on a picture, not on an encounter, not on involvement, not on a conversation, just a name. Just one name. Probably that's the reason that you've never met a kid named Jezebel or Judas. Can't imagine the stigma that might follow. Names speak about a person's reputation. Names also involve a person's, to some degree, another character. In Bible times, parents would normally name one of their children some great character attribute they wanted the child to have. Their name might mean honesty, or their main name might mean favor, or their name might mean a warrior, or their name might mean justice. Sometimes God would even change someone's name and give them a new name because the new name would represent the person that God was turning them into. He said, your name was Abram, but I'm going to call you Abraham. And the name Abraham means the father of multitudes. He said to Jacob, your name is Jacob, I'm going to call you Israel, which means God strives. When he was calling his disciples and he met one disciple, he said, I'm going to change your name from Simon to Peter, which means stone or rock, and on this rock I'll build my church. Names contain a lot of information. Not just reputation, not just character, but also authority. I mean, we probably don't hear this as much as we used to, But there was once a popular phrase in legal circles, stop in the name of the law. In the name of the law. Not in my name. It's not about me. It's not about where I live. I represent someone else. And that name that I represent, the law, carries authority. Names contain power and authority. In fact, if you were to give me your name, you could sign a piece of paper and legally give me your name, and if you did, I could access all the money you have, I could sell your house, and I could make major decisions concerning your life. If you were to just simply sign a piece of paper and give me your name, then I would have your authority. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, God in the Ten Commandments has given us instruction concerning his name. Look at Exodus 27, 20 verse 7. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Some translations say, do not take in vain the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Why is it a big deal to God when we misuse his name? I want you to imagine for a minute this morning, you were a fish born in the ocean. And if you were a fish born in the ocean, you wouldn't know that you lived in the water. You would only know that you lived. No more than we are conscious of the fact when we first come into this life that we're born on land, we just live. Imagine this morning if you were a fish born in the ocean, you were surrounded by water. You wouldn't know that you were surrounded by water. You would just know that you lived. You would never look for water, you would overlook water, like we overlook air. That's sort of the way it is with God. Our challenge in knowing God is not that he's so far away that we can't find him, it's that oftentimes he's so close that we overlook him. God is present. Like an artist signing their name to a painting, God has signed his name in the bottom right-hand corner of creation and sunrises and waterfalls and mountains and beaches. The fact that we have a conscience inside of our own emotional, psychological makeup to try to determine the difference between right or wrong means that God has signed his name to your conscience and to my conscience. He has put his name on us. Genesis 1 through 3 says we were created in his image. From the moment we were given birth, we breathed, and the Bible describes that breath as the ruach, the Hebrew word ruach, as the spirit of God, the breath of God. God created Adam from the dust of the ground, and he breathed in his lungs, and that breath was the ruach of God. From the moment we breathed the breath of life, and God was inside us. God is closer than we think. But God is also, God is not God's name. God wants to be known by his name. But God isn't a name. God is a generic term describing what God is. The Lord is not God's name. The Lord is a title describing how God functions. What his role is. He is the Lord. He is rock. He is shepherd. He is Alpha. He is Omega. But that's not the things that he is. Those are his titles. My title is pastor. But that's not my name. My name is Jay. When people call me by my name, I feel like a person. My wife is Stacy. She's not the wife. Some of you guys might go there. I don't go there. Hey, wife, what's for dinner? The wife. The wife called. I got an email from the wife. Yeah, that's kind of like the wife saying, the old man. We don't go there at our house. My wife is Stacy. Wife is her title. But Stacy is her name. God has a name. God decided to reveal himself by his name. And he wants us to call him by his name. Now, there's a whole lot of history here that I don't want to wade through this morning. But for our purposes, I think it is significant that when the God of the universe chose to reveal himself, he chose to reveal himself by name. And if you look inside the scripture and you look at the original languages, God's name is Yahweh. That's God's name. Now, Yahweh is, this is interesting, is not a noun, it's a verb. I don't know anybody's name that's a verb. Yahweh is not a noun, Yahweh is a verb, and it comes from the phrase which means to be. And it could mean he is or he causes to be. Now let me just cut through a lot of this. A literal translation of the name Yahweh could say, I am the one, this is the thought I want you to get, and if you're taking notes, write this down. I am the one who is really there with you and for you. I am the real God who is really there with you. And for what did I say? He's closer than we think. He's put his signature on creation. He's put his signature on our conscience. He has formed our very breath inside our lungs. He is the real God who is really there, who is closer than we think. And he's not only the God who's with you, he's the God who's for you. That's what the name Yahweh means. Moses said, who should I say sent me? Tell them I am sent you. I am what? I am the God who is with you, and I am the God who is for you. I am the real God. That's what the name Yahweh means. When he decided to reveal himself, that's how he revealed himself. So when God revealed his name, he's revealing, now this, I don't want you to miss this point, he's revealing himself. He was showing us his reputation. He was showing us his character. He was showing us his authority. I am the real one true God who is really there. When we misuse his name, we're not just misusing a title, but we're dragging his reputation, we're dragging his character, and we're dragging his authority through the mud. To misuse God's name or to use God's name in vain is to use God in vain. You can't separate God from his name. They're one and the same thing. Or said another way, God cannot be separated from his name. Therefore, to use God's name in vain is to use God in vain. The word misuse or vain comes from a Hebrew root word that means to be empty. When we use God's name in vain, we fill his name with emptiness. We fill it with a lack of significance. We call it of no value, of no substance. So when you misuse God's name, it leaves his name without substance. It leaves his name without value. Now let me give you three or four ways this morning, if you're taking notes, that I think, and there's probably dozens, but I just want to give you a few ways that we can misuse God's name. The things that I think that apply probably to us and our culture and our time the most, although they're not the only ways. And I'll start with the obvious, and then I'll move to the very unobvious. One of the ways I think that we misuse God's name, we misuse God's name when we use God's name as slang or in cursing. In jest, in casual language. But let me say this from the very beginning and go ahead and give you a hint about what's coming. I think that's the least way that we misuse God's name. I think we've made it the highest way. I think it's the least way. And I'll show you the other ways. Now, Christians will tell you misusing God's name in speech or conversation or slang is just a bad habit. But the Bible tells us that from the abundance of the heart, the mouth overflows. So throwing God's name around carelessly signifies a careless heart. A person that uses God's name carelessly has some parts of their heart that they operate in carelessly. This is why I don't completely understand the popular abbreviation that's caught on, and I hear a lot of Christians use it, OMG. I don't understand how we as people called by God's name have adopted that language into our own conversation. It doesn't make sense to me. We know what it stands for. I don't want to pick a fight with anybody. I'm just saying, it's hard for me to understand that. Have you ever used someone's name flippantly in conversation because you didn't think they could hear you? Come on, I see you out there. You can't hide. You just throw their name out there, and they're nowhere around. Nobody could hear you. But something happened, and you underestimated the situation, and they were closer than you thought, and they heard you. Oh, oh, oh. Somebody says, they're right there. Oh, oh. What happened? I mean, what happened when that happened? You felt bad for throwing their name out there so casually, but something deeper happened. Listen to what happened. You suddenly became aware that they were there. You were unaware that they were right there. And all of a sudden, your awareness shot up, and you realized that they were closer than you thought. What's the deal with a person that uses God's name uselessly or in vain in slang or casual conversation or cursing? At that moment, they are unaware that God's there. There's no awareness that God's anywhere close. I can just throw his name out there anywhere I want because he can't hear me from where he is. He's way off. And what I just want you to know today, God has revealed himself inside his name as the God that's closer than you think. He's the real God that's really there, that can really help. The real God. The closer you get to God, the more aware of his presence you become. The less likely you will use his name uselessly because you realize he can't be separated from his name. He and his name are the same thing. Here's the second one. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that one's less offensive to God. I'm just saying I think that's the least way that we violate. But because we haven't known what else to do with this commandment, we have felt like it's the only and the highest. Let me give you two or three more that I think are worse. Here's the second one. Using God's name as a magic formula. Using God's name as a magic formula is to use God's name in vain. Is to use it uselessly. You have to understand the culture by which the Bible was written. The nations that surrounded Israel were nations who served a multitude of false gods. And there was no thought in any other culture that anybody could ever use any of their God's names in vain. In fact, they thought if they could use their God's name enough or repetitiously enough or in the right way or at the right time or when the moon was full or when the stars lined up or when an animal had been sacrificed in a certain way at midnight, they thought if they could somehow conjure up an incantation through their speech that they could attract their God's attention enough that they could control him or manipulate him into giving them a blessing. So there was no thought about using this commandment when it was given to Israel, completely challenged the known world view about deities at the time. So what God said to his people, don't use my name in vain. There was no way to use any of the false gods' names in vain. So it's possible then for the real God, the God that's really there, it's possible to use his name in vain. We use his name in vain when we think just because we use his name that we can get God to do what we want him to do. When we come to God in a feverish moment and we think there's something that God ought to be doing, whether we know his will or not, we say, in Jesus' name. Jesus' name. And sometimes we think because of our inflection, because of our enthusiasm, Because we learned to chant his name the right way. You can dial in on late night TV here and God. And we think because we do those things that we somehow rhythmically move God into our life. What God is saying is, I'm not moved that way. You can't just take everything you want, put a Christian fish logo on the end of it, and I'm attracted to it. God is not a brainless, dead, idol. God is not a false God. He's not a dumb God. He's not a God that is filled with such a vacuum in his soul that any sign of approval or hearing his name will just attract him. You can't go to a, you know, how to win friends and influence people and throw those principles at God and he comes running. God will not be controlled. He will be accessed by his name, but he won't be manipulated by it. He won't be controlled by it. His name is not a magic formula. Sometimes we say, God told me. Did he? Did he really tell you? Because if he didn't tell you, then you just used his name in vain. You just filled his name with emptiness and void. You made his name of no substance. To say, God told me, when God didn't say that. I think one of the challenges we've had to absolute truth in our culture is that for too long we preach too many things as absolute truth that we're not. And then we lost our authority to speak to our culture because we said, God said. And God said, I never said. And we've used, probably us preachers have violated this one more than anybody else. Although I will give you a kind of humorous example. Dr. Rutland, who was at Southeastern, I heard him tell a story about a church that he was at that there was a lady who'd sit in the balcony. And she had complained about the volume of the organ so long and couldn't get them to turn it down. So finally one Sunday in the middle of a quiet moment, she stood up to her feet and she says, Thus says the Lord, the organ's too loud. Do you think God thought the organ was too loud? I don't think it hurt his ears at all. I think she thought it was too loud. But when we reach our sweaty little fingers around God's name and drag it into our own issues for our own purposes to win, we violate God's name in a way that cursing just never will touch it. To manipulate, to pull God in on your behalf for to manipulate a circumstance is black magic and witchcraft. And I'm telling you, to me, it's a greater violation of the third commandment than someone hitting their finger with a hammer and letting it go. Here's a third way. Misrepresenting God. When we think about misusing God's name, we usually think about some of the other things that we've said. And I always hear people tell stories, you know. Well, you know, so-and-so, I was witnessing to a friend at work, and they used to use God's name in vain, and then they found out I was a Christian, and now they don't use God's name in vain anymore. And I'm not saying that's not important. I just think that we can overestimate its importance. I think because that person from 8 to 5 stopped doing that, but is rapid-firing them at home on the weekend, I'm not sure that that's a like conversion. You know? I'm not sure. I'm not sure life has changed. It's not bad. I just don't know if it's as good as we thought. I think real victory for us is not when we are able to curtail someone else's conversation with God's name, I think it's when we lift God's name up by living a lifestyle that represents Him well. I think that's victory. So I think misrepresenting God is one of the worst ways that we can misuse His name. Ephesians chapter 1, the Bible tells us that we have been adopted into God's family. Now you understand how adoption works. When someone's adopted, they take on the name of that family. And from then on, everyone views that person as a representative of the new family. When you and I accept Christ, God adopts us, and from that time on, our actions are identified with God. Our actions are identified with Christ. Our actions are identified with our new family. So I think one of the great challenges we've had in our time is so many people who've taken on God's name have misrepresented Him, that His name and the language that we use to talk about Him has done a lot of damage. In 1988, Karl Rahner said, "The number one cause of atheism is Christians. Those who proclaim God with their mouths and deny Him with their lifestyles is what an unbelieving world finds simply unbelievable. The greatest way we violate this tender commandment, I don't think, is profanity. I think it's when we say, 'Yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I'm a Christian. I serve God. I follow Christ. I've been changed on the inside.' But behind us, in the wake of our life, is a trail of scattered floating parts that deny faith. I'm not talking about a mistake. I'm not talking about an accident. We all have those. God's grace covers us. I'm talking about a clear pattern of life that denies the name that we claim has been stamped on us." Do you know what the word Christian means? Or do you know where it came from? After Jesus died, His disciples, Jesus never called His disciples Christian, neither did any of the patriarchs, neither did any of the disciples, neither did any of the apostles, neither did any of the churches. The name Christian was first born in Antioch. The people at Antioch who were not following Jesus, who were not God-fearers, who had not been changed on the inside supernaturally, people on the outside of faith, they looked at the people who followed Christ and they called them Christians. What they were saying is, "We personally met Jesus. We saw Him, we listened to Him teach, we watched the way that He lived, and you know what? You guys remind me of Him. You act just like Him. What's wrong with you crazy people?" And they called them Christians because what they would say was, "Here come the little Christ. Here comes the little Christ now." And among Christians, that badge was worn with honor because they knew it was likely, if they were called that, it was because their life mirrored Jesus enough that they could be mistaken for Him. And it was likely if they were mistaken for Him, they would suffer similar persecution that He did, and some would die for it. So it was a badge worn sober-mindedly, with honor. These guys represented Jesus so well, people who knew them put Christ's name on them. Has anyone ever made that mistake about you? Has anyone ever made that mistake about me? They didn't have bumper stickers or t-shirts or pins or WWJD bracelets, fish on their car, Christian radio, the newest Christian CD. They were known by the way they lived, and they stood out. And they didn't uselessly drag God's name into their lives. His name was not wasted on them. They represented Him well. In the middle 90s, an engagement ring fell into the sea off the west coast of Sweden. It fell to the bottom of the sea and was eaten by a mussel. Now, a fisherman who was fishing that same water years later caught a harvest of muscle, and he opened one and found the ring in it. When he saw the ring, he was able to take it and return it back to the woman who lost it off into the ocean years before that. Her name was Agneta Wingstead. The reason he was able to return the ring to her is because her name was engraved on it. Did you know that God has written his name on you? He has permanently embedded his name on you. His name is written on you. It's written on me. And he's closer to you than you think. So close, in fact, we often overlook him. In Genesis, it says that he created us in his image. In Revelation, we hear about an entire gathering of people who have his name written on their forehead. Not the mark of the beast, but who has his name on them. We are identified by his name. I'm going to ask our worship team to come now. And let me give you the last one. And this is really a twister. We've talked about profanity. We've talked about magic formulas. We've talked about a lifestyle. Let me tell you a way that I think that we may take God's name in vain that I've never thought about till recently. Here's the fourth one. Neglect. To neglect God's name is to discount it as worthless. It's not to misuse it by doing something wrong with it. It's to misuse it by not using it. Does that make sense? It's to misuse it by neglecting it, misuse it by avoiding it. Maybe that's the ultimate way. It's just to never use God's name at all. To act, to live, to talk in such a way that we just don't need God. We don't need him and we're fine to live independent of him. Just pushing and shoving through life at top speed. Never slowing down enough to acknowledge God or to pray or to cry or to celebrate or to claim our dependency on him or to say, oh God, you are the God, you are the real God who is really here and who can really help. Maybe just not turning to God is the way that we misuse his name, just by not calling on him. Someone once said the ultimate blasphemy was to never use God's name at all. Just live like he's not there. This entire commandment is tender because it's God's self-revelation to say, I am Yahweh. I am the real God who's really there, who's present with you, who loves you. Call on me. Turn to me. See if I won't prove myself to you. See if I've spanned across the bridges of time and history in the universe just to stop 2 feet short of your own heart. Open yourself to me. This tender commandment is about a God who loves us enough to reveal himself and to not just give us his title, not just give us his business card, but to give us his home phone number. Here's my name. Call on me. Call on me and see. What does he say in Chronicles? If my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray, seek my face. See if I will not come and heal your land. Try my name. It's not a formula. It's an invitation. Yahweh. Yahweh. God has revealed Himself as the one who's really there and who's really there for us. Every week I say to you, I think it's so important to respond. How can we respond to God's revelation of Himself? So personal, even in His name. Well, stand with me. This morning, here's how I want to ask you to respond. Respond to God's invitation of His name. Where is your heart heavy? Do you feel alone? Are you lonely this morning? Is your heart overwhelmed? Is your mind filled with worry? Are the things troubling you? Do you need a miracle? Do you need God's touch in your life? Do you need healing? Do you need provision? Do your relationships need some work? I just want to point you to the God who's invited you by His name to come to Him. And this morning, as we sort of wrap this service up in a different way, I just want to ask you right where you are, if you're comfortable with this, close your eyes and begin to speak. If you want to lift your hands, you can. And just begin to speak and say, God, this morning I honor Your name. Would you say that with me? God, this morning I honor Your name. Lord, I worship Your name. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be Your name. Lord, I worship Your name this morning. I lift Your name up. I set my eyes. I set my heart. I set my mind. Lord, I set my emotions on Your name this morning. And I glorify You, Lord. I don't want to take Your name in vain by neglecting to call it. Lord, it's not a name that I have to hide or run from. It's not a name that I have to be so afraid of that I can't call. It's a sweet name. You've given me Your name. You've called me by Your name. Lord, I worship Your name this morning. Your name is Your character. Your name is Your being. Your name is Your heart. Lord, I lift You up in this place today. God, I worship You. God, I worship Your name. Those needs that are rising up in your life, give them to Him. Say, Lord, I don't want to live independent of You. I turn this need over to You today. Would you turn the need over to Him today? Lord, this pressure, this fear, this worry, this anxiety, this longing, Lord, I turn it over to You today. I turn it over to You today, Lord. I turn it over to You today. As you're praying now, our worship team is going to lead us.